Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Fidelity Bank H1 2020 Results Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Nnamdi Okonkwo. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am Nnamdi Okonkwo, CEO of Fidelity Bank, and I welcome you to our H1 2020 Results Conference Call. I'll start with performance updates. We closed the period with a PBT of 12 billion naira, which was a double-digit growth of 21.9% when compared with H1 PBT of 9.8 billion. We had to restate our H1 2019 numbers from 15.1 billion to 9.8 billion. This was due to the impact of first-time implementation of IFRIC 21 levies. Now, the implication of this accounting treatment was that our full-year AMCON cost for 2020 financial year, which amounted to 11.9 billion, was recognized 100%. In our H1 financial statement, rather than being amortized over 12 months, as was done previously in our financials. So, on account of this, and for comparative purposes, we made some adjustments to H1 2019 comparative numbers. So, without the adoption of IFRIC 21, our actual PBT for H1 2020 would have come in at 17.9 billion naira, compared with 15.1 billion originally reported in H1 2019. The growth in PBT was attributable to a 27.1% increase in operating income to 66.6 billion, compared to an 8.3% increase in operating expenses to 46.8 billion. So in absolute terms, our operating income grew by 14.2 billion, while operating expenses grew by 3.4 billion. NIM came in ahead of guidance at 6.4%. This was due to significant decline in funding costs, and this drove the growth of 31% in net interest income. In addition, we saw a significant decline in most fee income lines in Q2. Of course, understandably, this was due to the slowdown in economic activities. Happily, it was offset by significant growth in our FX income, which was driven by revaluation gains on our net long position. We'll be speaking about that later. Our cost-income ratio came down to 70% in H1, as we saw material decline in most expense lines in Q2. Due to lower operating costs at our business offices, as a greater percentage of our people had to work remotely. For ROE, it stood at 9.4%. This tracks behind our 2020 guidance of 11.3%. Marking our balance sheet, we currently use NAFEX exchange rate of 386.75 to the dollar. And that led to a 1.4% increase in total deposits and a 2.8% on the net loan book. Over the period, total deposits increased by 14.8% to 1.4 trillion. And that was driven by 10.7% growth in low-cost deposits, which explains the 200 basis points drop in our funding costs. For local currency deposits, it grew by 18%, while foreign currency deposit recorded a 4.2% increase as we saw increased utilization by customers to meet their foreign exchange obligations. For loans and advances, it increased by 7.3% to 1.2 trillion. However, the actual growth in loans was 4.5%. But the impact of currency adjustments accounted for 2.8% of the growth So if you put those two together, it gives you the 7.3% you see there. Cost of risk increased 1.3%. This is on account of our proactively increasing impairments for the sectors that we saw that were badly affected by COVID-19 pandemic. So it led to an increase in total impairment for the period to 7.8 billion on the loan book of 1.2 trillion. And this 7.8 billion, if you compare it with the same period last year, we had 600 million naira write back. At this time, it's 7.8 billion charge. I'd like to speak about forbearance window, which CBN granted, to provide some color on what we've done there. We considered obligors that would require any of these four parameters: interest rate adjustment, tenor extension, principal moratorium, or interest moratorium. Then we modeled our loan book using three scenarios, which we came up for the impact of the pandemic on our business strategy. So in the best case scenario, we had modeled that we'll be granting forbearance on 25% of the loan book. For moderate case, we're looking at 50%, and worst case scenario is 75%. But having said this, actual forbearance so far is 32.5%. And out of this, 10% is on account of public sector accounts. Our NPL ratio increased to 4.8% from 3.3% in corresponding period of last year. This was on account of 58.8% growth in absolute stage 3 loan book. This further reflects our conservative assessment of the sectors affected by the pandemic. For other regulatory ratios, we remain above the required thresholds. Capital adequacy ratio increased to 18.8% from 18.3%. This was due to the capitalization of H1 audited numbers, which we are discussing today. Liquidity ratio stood at 32.1%. So looking into H2, our cost numbers will come in lower because we have taken the AMCON cost in full in H1, which I mentioned earlier. So having taken that pain in H1, it means that we'll be free of any AMCON charge for the rest of the year. However, we also do not expect to have the same level of FX income coming through in Q3 and Q4. So I'll now give you some governance updates. As some of you may be aware, our immediate past chairman, Mr. Ernest Ebi, turned 70. In line with our internal policy, he retired. And in his place, we already have a new chairman, Mr. Mustafa Chikeobi. Then, as we also may be aware, I'll be completing my contractual tenure 31st of December 2020. So in line with our succession planning strategy, the board has already appointed a CEO designate who will be succeeding me January 1, 2021. She's Mrs. Neka Onyalikwe, and this appointment has already been approved by Central Bank. So we're currently in transition under a carefully crafted schedule. So we'll be announcing some board changes in Q4 as well, as some of our executive directors, non-executive directors, will be completing their tenure. So we'll also announce a new executive to replace Neka, who will be coming in as CEO January 1. So we'll be announcing her successor in due course, most likely in Q4. So on this note, I'll hand over to Bolaho to take us through detailed presentation, and after that, we'll be open to take questions. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Nambi. So I'll just start from slide 4. It just shows an overview of the bank. Total assets are now $6.2 billion. Headcount, 2,869 staff, and 5.4 million accounts, 2.7 million mobile customers, 14-member board, 9-member executive management team. I'll go to slide 5, which just shows an overview of our retail and digital banking play. We've still sustained growth on a year-on-year basis. Savings came in very strong at 32% in H1. It's 364 billion, and it's now about 26% of the deposit book. From a digital penetration perspective, over 51% of our customers are using our mobile and internet banking products. 87% of our transactions are done on the digital channels. In the recently released KPMG Digital Channel Scorecard, our chatbot was rated as the clear leader, and our USSD channel was also in the top tier. I'll go to slide 7, which speaks to the operating environment. Pressure points from a GDP perspective, it's come down. We've seen moderate growth in credit to the private sector. The increase in the price of PMS and the electricity tariffs, that could spike a little political risk, even though it's positive for some of the obligors we have on the power book. In terms of COVID-19, its impact on the businesses, I think we've seen the worst of that. We've seen some stabilization in terms of the yield. The oil prices have recovered above $40. Deposit growth has been positive, also because of the debt of investment outlets. The Naira is still under pressure, but CBN has commenced FX sales to the FPIs and the BDCs. Now, go to slide 8, which just speaks to what we did from a COVID-19 perspective, the notable measures we implemented. The bank set up 2 committees to look at business continuity and business strategy, both headed by executive directors. From a business strategy perspective, we looked at 3 scenarios. Base case scenario was the economy opening in July. Moderate case was October, and then worst case was 2021. Looking at across the scenarios, we felt it could affect our business from a PBT perspective from 15% decline to 30%. We're currently working with the base case scenario, and that's why we've modeled for a lower ROE for this year. We've had to grant moratorium in line with the CBN forbearance to some select sectors. Namdi just said about 32.5% of the loan book has been granted that forbearance, a chunk of that in the public sector space because of the loans we had under the CBN intervention funds. And from a business continuity perspective, we introduced new COVID-19 protocols, limiting footfalls for staff and customers in the banking hall. We do 5 customers at a time. We implemented new health and safety procedures across the branches. About 50% of our staff were working remotely. The prior investments we've made in technology came in very handy for us to be able to work remotely, seamlessly from a collaboration perspective. We had to migrate additional services to the cloud so that staff could access them remotely. And then from a security perspective, we had to have new IT security protocols in view of the changing cyber security landscape. I'll go to slide 10. I think Namdi has spoken a lot about the financial highlights, but gross earnings up 2%. To 106 billion, growth in both fund-based and fee-based income. We saw NIM coming at 6.4%. That drove the growth in the fund-based income. And then a lot of the growth in the fee-based income was driven by the increased FX income coming from the revaluation gains. Operating income was up 27% to 66 billion. And even though OPEX was up 8.3% to 46.8 billion, and that brought down CIR to 70%. Cost of risk was up significantly to 1.3% in H1, and then PBT came in at 12 billion, 22% growth. And now they have spoken about the reinstatement of the accounts, and I'll just go to slide 11. So we're marking the balance sheet at 386.75. That had an impact of 1.4% growth on our deposit base and 2.8% growth on the loan book. Our total deposits was up to 1.4 trillion. Local currency deposits are 1.1 trillion. And then FCY deposits went down to 300 billion. And then in dollar terms, it also went down because customers were utilizing their FX for their needs. I've spoken about savings. It was responsible for almost 50% of the deposit growth in H1 2020. And then the net loan book, 2.8% of that due to the impact of the currency adjustment, and then 4.5% growth due to pure play loan growth. LDR is at 65.9%. When we put the weighting for the retail and SME sectors, it goes to 69.8%. Above the 65% threshold, we've never been debited for not meeting the LDR requirement. CAR has improved to 18.8% from 18.3%. Internal guidance is 16%. Right now, we only recognize 20% of our local currency bond. And I'll speak to that when I get to the slide on capital. Slide 12 just shows the key highlights from a revenue, asset quality, and capital adequacy perspective. FCY loans have moved up to 45.7% of the net loan book, obviously because of the currency adjustment. The NPL ratio, which is stage 3 loans, is up to 4.8% from 3.3%. Slide 13 shows a detailed breakdown of the income statement. And you see pressure points from a fee income perspective. Digital banking income was down 29%. And that's a trend we've seen across the industry because of a reduction in the fees attributable to e-channels from the new bankers tariff. Slide 14 shows the quarter-on-quarter movement in the P&L numbers. Net interest income came in at 3.6% lower. Very strong growth in fee income, coming in at 120% growth. The chunk of that obviously coming from FX income. Operating expenses were up about 3.5 billion, 16.6%. A chunk of that also coming in from the additional AMCON cost recognized in Q2, which was a growth of about 6 billion compared to Q1 2020. From a balance sheet perspective, looking to slide 15, cash reserve, we've had additional debits of about 145 billion in H1, 42% growth in the cash reserve, effective cash reserve ratio on a deposit, local currency deposit book of 1.1 trillion is about 44%. We've also had some lending from the DCRR perspective, about 70 billion. If you net that up, it gives a net CRR of about 38%. Strong growth on all the other lines. Most of the deposit lines came in very strong. On slide 16, I'll go to the breakdown of the earnings. You look at Q2, and you see that there was a decline in most of the fee income line, obviously due to slowdown in economic activities, and there was growth in FX income, and then trade income was down about 55%. Slide 17 speaks to NIM. We've modeled for 5.5% to 6% for this year. It's still strong at 6.4% as at H1, and we think it's still going to go down slightly as we get into the H2 for two reasons. And number one, the higher yielding fixed income securities will mature. From a reinvestment perspective, we don't expect to get those yields. Even though we'll get some positive uptick from the reduction in the interest rates on the savings book, because that's now about 26% of the deposit book. But we saw a slight change in customer behavior in Q2. About 40% of the customers used to do more than 4 withdrawals in a month and were not eligible for savings and interest payment. During the pandemic period, we saw that drop below 30%. And so the growth in interest expense between Q1 and Q2 was largely coming from the savings book. Slide 18 just shows a breakdown of OPEX. If you look at the quarter-on-quarter numbers, you see the AMCON cost going up by 6 billion because of the IFRIC 21. And then a reduction in most of the other expense lines, obviously lower business offices cost due to the remote working protocols. On slide 20, just shows an analysis of the funding base. Deposits moved up. It's now about 65% of total funding base from about 62% at the end of the financial year. Slide 21 shows a breakdown of the deposit book. Foreign currency deposits are now 21% of total deposits. In the last 6 months, it's been hovering around 23%. Came down from 320 to 308 because of the FX challenges and customers using their own domiciliary deposits for some of their obligations. Slide 22 just a breakdown of our retail banking play. Strong growth from savings deposits, now at 26%. We saw the assets come down on a year-on-year basis, but on a quarter-on-quarter basis, it's ticked up a little bit. We're still very conservative looking at that book because of the pressure on the consumer disposable income. Slide 23 shows a breakdown of the liquid assets position. We've tried to keep it short. We think the interest rate curve still normalizes going forward. Slide 24 shows a breakdown of the loan group. 7.5% growth moved from 1.1 trillion to 1267, and about 89 billion growth. In terms of key sectors responsible for the growth, you see the upstream, downstream, and then midstream, which is the services. And then you also see some growth coming from the general commerce book. Slide 25 shows a breakdown of the loan book into foreign currency and local currency. This is on the gross loan book, and from a gross loan book perspective, it's 43% foreign currency and 57% local currency. And slide 26 just shows a breakdown of the loan book into the various sectors. The manufacturing, upstream, transport, government, power, and general commerce, those six sectors account for 70% of the loan book. Slide 27 is a deeper dive into the loan book. 31 billion out of the growth in the loan book coming from the currency adjustment from 364 to 386. There was a drop in the local currency loan book, mainly coming from the manufacturing, consumer finance, insurance, and public sector. Slide 28 shows a breakdown of the loan book into stage 1, stage 2, and stage 3. Stage 1 is about 72% of the book, stage 2 about 23%, and stage 3, which is the NPL book, is about 4.8%. In terms of coverage, the coverage ratio on the stage 3 book is about 57% and about 5% on the stage 1 book. Slide 29 speaks to the CBN forbearance. As Nnamdi said earlier, we're modeled using four parameters: any obligor who will require an interest rate review, a tenor extension, moratorium on principal, or moratorium on interest. And we came up with three scenarios: a base case scenario, moderate scenario, and the worst case scenario. So in the worst case scenario, we're looking at 75% of the book. Currently, we've taken about 32.5% of the book. About 10% of that is from the public sector. And then the intervention loans, which are about 150 billion, that's about 12.5%. A chunk of that is the public sector book. So 10% from the public sector and about 22.5% from other sectors. You look at the NPL book, it's gone up by about 58% looking at full year 2019 and H1 2020. So NPLs now are 4.8%, moved from 38 billion, but we had already dimensioned this book in Q1, as we mentioned during our call. So the NPLs already jumped from 38 billion to 58 billion. Just about 11.5% of the NPLs coming from the FCY book, and then majority still comes from the local currency book. Slide 31 just looks at the movement in NPLs, and for most of the sectors, you have seen a growth, and this is due to the impact of the COVID-19 on each of the business segments. And then slide 32 just shows a breakdown by currency, and slide 33 shows a breakdown into each of the sectors. The key pressure points are the manufacturing, the transport, and the oil and gas and downstream sector. During this period, we had to increase our probability of default, and so that affects our expected credit losses on our stage 1 and stage 2 book. Typically, from a base scenario, we assume 80%, moderate 10%, and worst case scenario 10%. We had to change that to 50%, 10%, and 4%. You will not see a lot of impairments coming in from the stage 1 and stage 2 book, because after doing that, we also increased the collateral coverage we had in each of those stages, looking at the impact it was going to have on the book. In terms of the breakdown of the 7.8 billion impairments we had, about 500 million was coming from the stage 1 book. We had a write back of about 4 billion on the stage 2 book, and then about 11.5 billion coming from the stage 3 book. So that's how you get a total of 7.8 billion impairments for H1. I'll go to slide 34, which speaks to capital adequacy. It's coming at 18.8%. Regulatory adjustment has increased between 2019 full year and H1 2020, and mainly due to the currency adjustment because the loan in question is a foreign currency loan. But if you look at it on a quarter-on-quarter basis, the regulatory adjustment dropped by 4.7%. We have a local currency bond, which is callable this year. We will be calling in the bond. We are obliged to give the bondholders maximum of 60 days notice and a minimum of 30 days notice. The coupon payment is in November, and so we will be calling it in, and we are likely to issue another bond. Issue size is likely to be between 30 to 50 billion, and we'll be looking at maturity of between 7 to 10 years. That should add 200 basis points from a capital perspective. Tier 1 capital is currently 109 billion, so we can take a third of that as Tier 2. So if you look at a third of that, we're inching closer to 70 billion by the end of the year. And that's why we're doing a ticket size, which will most likely be 50 billion. So we'll be calling in the bond, and then we'll be issuing another bond. All this will be done in Q4. Slide 35 shows a breakdown of the revenues coming from the business segment. Corporate and investment banking, strong play for H1 because of the revaluation gains we had on the treasury book. And then so about 40% coming from corporate and investment banking, and then about 60% coming from our business offices. I'll go to the last slide, which is slide 37, and it just shows where we are on the guidance. We're on track on 8 of the indices. Net interest margin is at 6.4%. Tax rate is below the guidance. The loan growth, we're tracking on well. Deposit growth, we're above the guidance. Cost-income ratio is 70% range. Dividends not yet applicable. NPL ratio below 5%. Cost of risk at 1.3%. Where we need a little upside is ROE, which is at 9.4%. We're tracking below the 11.3%. Like Namdi said, for H2, we expect the cost numbers to come in lower. We will not be taking in any AMCON cost. From a revenue perspective, we also don't expect to have the revaluation gains we had in H1. But net-net, we think that will be positive for us, also looking at the gains we should get from the reduction in the interest expense on the savings book. Thank you, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1. The first question comes from Toyosi Oni from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for having this call. Also, congratulations to NECA on her appointment. So I have a number of questions, and I'm just going to start from, I suppose, asset quality. So I wanted to understand better the nature of the Stage 2 loans and how these are performing right now. So do we see them migrating into Stage 3, or are they going to be moving up? So if you could just give a bit more color on that. Also, still on the Stage 2 loans, the coverage is about 5%. And, I mean, arguably that's the trend we've seen across the industry, but I just wanted to understand more about this. It does seem a bit low considering everything that's happening. And if you can just remind us of the terms of your restructured loans. You mentioned about 33% has been restructured. So the ones that have moratoriums or, you know, some extensions, could you just give us the nature of these sort of restructurings? And for the ones that the moratorium period is going to be running out very soon, could you just say how these have been performing so far? Also, still on that point, you're currently in between your base and moderate case scenario. So where do we see this sort of settling by the end of the year? Then my next question is on your cost of risk. So the target for full year 20 is, I believe, 1.5, and we're currently at 1.3%. So do we take it that the pace of impairments is going to start coming off going to the rest of the year? And my last question is on your non-funded income. So we saw a big drop in net fees and commissions, understandably, But then what has been the trend in Q3 as things start to perform? And could you give, I suppose, a more specific guidance on your NIR line going into the rest of the year? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So you see, on the Stage 2 loans, if you look at the color of the Stage 2 loans, out of the 292 billion we have there, almost 237 billion out of that is in the power sector and the oil and gas sector. Do we think they will migrate to Stage 3? No. We think some of the things that have happened from a power perspective in terms of the tariff is actually positive for the obligors we have in that sector. And for those we have in the energy space, for one or two of them, there's a big obligor there. I think it's a syndicated loan, and the syndicate is just waiting to complete the restructuring. In terms of where do we see it migrating to over the period? I think if we look at our Stage 2 loans and in terms of the coverage at about 5%, what we've actually done in H1, like I said, we increased our probability of default, which apparently affects the Stage 1 and Stage 2 book. And what we did was we also increased the collateral coverage on that book. So we think that should be fine. In terms of the forbearance, yes, you're right. It's at 32%, and we're within the base and moderate scenario. We think it should settle somewhere around the moderate scenario from an upside perspective. In terms of cost of risk at 1.3%, do we see it going up? Do we see it coming down? We think it's largely stabilized. We think the worst of the pandemic is over. We're quite aggressive in H1. For some of the sectors, if you look at the breakdown of the impairments I actually gave, for the Stage 2 book, we actually had a write-back on the Stage 2 book of about 4 billion because of the increased collateral coverage. But from the Stage 3 book, we actually took total impairments on the Stage 3 book of about 11.5 billion. So we're quite aggressive on the Stage 3 book. And from a H1 perspective, rough and dirty, we don't think we're going to come in above the cost of risk guidance. In terms of the non-funded income, we don't expect to see the kind of bump we saw in Q2 because of the spike in FX-related income from valuation gain. However, for the other fee income lines, credit-related fees, e-banking fees, account maintenance fees, and trade, we expect those to pick up in Q3 and Q4 because they're mainly transactional income. And for H1, they were really impacted by the slowdown in economic activities. So as economic activities pick up, we expect them to normalize and pick up. Thank you.
Toyosi, does that answer all your questions?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tunde Abidoye from FBN Quest Merchant Bank. Please go ahead, Tunde.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for hosting the call. So I have a couple of questions, and the first one is on the FCY component of your oil and gas book. So if I look at that component, it dropped down to about 43%. In H1 from 77% in Q1 2020. Please, can you provide some color on how you were able to reduce that component so fast, particularly since the book actually moved up by around 9% during the quarter? Then I noticed that there are no NPLs for the oil and gas upstream exposure. Can you provide some color on this, given the significant reduction that we saw with oil prices in Q2? Just by way of context, one of the indigenous upstream firms reported a loss before tax of about $50 million during the quarter. So I'm just wondering how the NPL is so clean for this line. I think that's all for now.
Okay, so I'll start with the second question in terms of the NPL on the oil and gas upstream book. If you look at slide 28, and you look at the oil and gas upstream book, you see that even though there are no NPLs from a Stage 2 perspective, about 50% of the portfolio is in Stage 2. So 50% of the portfolio is in Stage 2 because we had seen some weaknesses in some of the obligors in terms of missing one or two repayments. So in terms of days past due, it's not yet sufficient for them to be in stage 3, and that is why they are in stage 2. The first question was on the FCY component. If you look at the FCY component of the oil and gas book, and that's on slide 25, you see that for the upstream book, it's basically total FCY. Where you will have seen the material change is in the downstream book. And that's because what you see now is a lot of those obligors, they buy directly from PPMC. So there's been quite a shift in the transaction dynamics in that market. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Randolph Westerhazen from Old Mutual Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Congratulations on the result. And also, I must say, that was the most efficient presentation I've ever listened to. So that's well done. We enjoyed that. Just some questions on the bond that you're now going to call and reissue. How much do you expect you to save on pricing? I would imagine that should be quite a bit cheaper now. If you can just give some numbers around that. Then you mentioned that you don't expect another reval gain. So does that mean you're not expecting the currency to move until the end of the year? So sort of 386 being the current level. Then I was just curious, have you done an exercise to work out if it hadn't been for the banker's tariff review, what your fee income would have been? So sort of the amount in Naira or else equal if the banker's tariffs weren't revised down. I'm just curious, you know, to know what the cost or the impact to that have been on your numbers.
Okay, thank you. I'll start on the last question. If the fees had remained the same, we should have seen about a 35% to 40% growth in our electronic banking income, just based on the increased customer adoption and then in terms of the total number of transactions across each of the channels. In terms of revaluation, looking at the currency, if we look at what has happened over the last few weeks, what we've modeled with is that there will not be any major adjustment. If there's a major adjustment, that's a positive upside for us from a revenue perspective, but it also has a few implications for us also from a capital perspective. But we've made a model that basically it remains at about the present level up until the end of the year.
Not anything significant or material. In terms of the bond issuance,
I can't give you specifics in terms of pricing. Obviously, typically, we pay a premium on the applicable sovereign in terms of the tenor we're going to use. Just looking at where rates are now, rates are much lower compared to. So this present bond is at about 16.48%. If we look at the applicable bonds for 5 to 10 years, we're looking at the high single digits and then the low double digits. But the market changes very fast, and we don't know what the market dynamics will be in the next 6 to 8 weeks when we should be coming to the market.
But all things being equal, it should be cheaper
from an interest expense perspective to us. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So, and then just one quick question is on AMCON. Have you got any view on when that will end?
Well, we have no view on when it will end for now in terms of the how long the organization is going to stay or how long banks are going to keep on paying for it. So we just model that it just continues operating as an entity. That's how we've modeled for now.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Muyiwa Oni from Standard Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation and congratulations on the makers of conference. And I have a few questions. I think the first is on your retail loan. So I think you highlighted in one of the slides, I think on page 22, on proprietary online platform and fintech driving that retail growth. So suppose if you could share a split between how much is proprietary, how much is from your fintech partner, and then also maybe share how much of your total retail loan book of 51 billion is related to the online platform, because I suspect that it's not all of it. So if you could share the size of that. And then secondly, on your customer growth, I see the numbers are much more sluggish this year relative to last year, so up about 100,000 over the last 6 months versus last year, where there was about 300,000 increase. So I just wanted to share what your views on in terms of growth going forward. I suspect the lockdown that had a negative impact on growth, what expectations is for the end of the year. And then if you could also share color on active and dormant customers as well. And then thirdly, just wanted to get your view on the competitive landscape. Wondering if you're exploring thoughts of going into other non-banking financial services in search of growth, just looking at competition and what's happening in there. And those are my questions.
Okay, Muyiwa, thank you, and thank you for your kind words. Let me start with the last one about whether we're going into other areas. By our strategic plan, we'll remain a bank for now. As you know, we have a 5-year strategic plan that would be completed in 2022. After then, or about the end of that time, we'll re-strategize. For now, we're staying focused as just a bank until then. Thank you.
Okay, I'll take the other two questions. In terms of customer growth, so last year it averaged about 65,000 on a monthly basis. This year it slowed down significantly, averaged about 22,000 on a monthly basis. What we've seen after the pandemic, coming into Q3, the numbers are back up to about 40,000 range on a monthly basis. In terms of dormancy, what we have, it's about 35% of the customers, especially at the much lower mass market end, are dormant, about 35% of them. In terms of the loan book, giving color to the retail loan book, what we have on the retail loan book, the 51 billion, those are the loans we book directly from our balance sheet. So the partnerships we have with the fintechs, they carry the credit risk, and then what we do is a revenue share. So we do the customer mining with them and the algorithm in terms of profiling the customer. They carry the credit risk, and then what we have with them is a revenue share. Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
The next question comes from Edward John Bottomley from Red Intelligence. Please go ahead.
Hi, good day. Thank you for the presentation. I just want to ask on the bond. Is it the local bond that you plan to redeem? And is the bond that you plan to issue, is that subordinated? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. It's the local bond that we're trying to redeem. And we'll be reissuing a local bond as well. Thank you.
Edward, do you have any further questions?
Just whether that the bond that, so will the bond be subordinated or not? Sorry, I can't hear quite well.
Yes, it will be subordinated.
Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Wale Okonriboye from Sigma Pensions. Please go ahead, Wale.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. My first question is on interest rates. What's your view on where interest rates are likely headed, and how do you see your NIMs, your net interest margins, evolving, not just this year, but maybe also into next year? If because I'm just trying to just get a grasp as to where's your view on interest rate direction, given what CBN has done by reducing minimum savings rate to 1%. Do you think you see a scenario, given where your average lending rate of 11%, is it more likely that you'd be willing to drop your average lending rates to at least maybe try and grow more volumes on the loan side, or do you think you still try and maintain your average lending rates around where they are, or do you see that also coming down just because of what's going on in the environment? My next question is also on your loan growth. So you're going to recall your bond and issue a new one. Do you see more room for growth in the current environment? How much upside do you think your balance sheet would be able to still support going forward? Third question is on what's your effective cash reserve ratio as at the end of H1? And then lastly, are you still going to maintain your dividend guidance or your dividend policy? Do you see any changes over 2020? That'll be all. Thank you.
Okay, dividend policy, let me start from there. We stay with our guidance of 30 to 50% payout. And then risk asset growth of our risk asset growth projection. If you look at the numbers, we're looking at we'll stay between 5 to 7.5 as already guided. If you look at our H1 numbers, we were at 4.5% if you discount the revaluation addition of 2.8%. So we're staying with our guidance of between 5 to 7.5%.
Okay, for CRR, it's effectively 44%, so total cash reserve is about 47 billion. Local currency deposits is about 1.1 trillion. Now, I said we also have loans refunded from the DCCR scheme of about 70 billion. So if you net that off the 487 billion, you arrive at about 417 billion, and then you get an effective rate of about 68% if you discount that.
Last question was on interest. Yeah.
Okay, good. In terms of interest rate, if you recall during the presentation, we said even though NIM came in at 6.4% for H1, we think it's going to trend lower towards the end of the year for two reasons. We've still got some of the fixed income instruments we bought, the one-year instruments we bought last year that will be maturing this year. They're still higher yielding instruments. We don't expect to see those kind of yields from a reinvestment perspective. That's number one. Number two, for some of the customers we're giving a forbearance, obviously some of them come with an interest rate reduction. So we should see a little pressure on interest rates coming from there. In terms of the positive will be in terms of the savings book, because it's about 26% of the book, the reduction in interest rates should give about 20 basis points accretion to NIM. But net-net, we think interest rates are going to come down from an NIM perspective. We expect to see a lower NIM in H2. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. We will pause to see if there are any further questions. Namdi, we have no further questions in the queue. Do you have any closing comments before we conclude?
Okay, thank you. Just to say that we'll continue to work hard in the midst of pandemic and look forward to delivering the numbers. We have spoken about revising our PBT downwards by 15%. Business activities have resumed a bit earlier than we expected. However, because it's not yet certain, we'll stay within that guidance. So on that note, we'll continue to work hard, and thank you for attending this meeting. We look forward to speaking to you next quarter. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.